racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Hello, I'm Craig Revell.
I'm Colin Ford.
And I'm Peter Norton. Welcome to this week's episode of Inside Motorsport.
Coming up this week, we'll have a chat to Brett Peters, who's in town for the Camp of Champions at the AIS. We'll also speak to the two winners of the Marsh Driver Training Program, as they have two new scholarship recipients for 2002. We'll also have an opportunity to hear from Procar Volkswagen driver Stuart McCall. John Evans will join us to talk oval racing and, of course, speedway going on right across the country. One name in the World Series sprint cars who's certainly one to look out for is Drew Kruk. He'll be along a little bit later in the program. But first, some news. You might have noticed last Sunday that we sat down in front of the telly to watch the last round of the Procar Championship Series on trackside, and it wasn't there. Well, it seems that Channel 10 have pulled their coverage of the Procar Series, and right now Procar are in a position where they are working extremely hard to put together a television package for 2002. It seems that SBS will be taking some of the races, whilst Fox Sports will be showing race packages on the Monday night following the event. So stay tuned for more details. In drag racing news, the on-again, off-again running situation with Adelaide International Raceway and Calder Park seems to be off again in as far as Andrew's concerned, with Bob Jane announcing this week that he will be taking his tracks away from the Andrew sanctioning. Another problem for drag racing in the southern part of Australia for sure. We'll all also be waiting to hear how the Americans start to fare as they are flood over here for this Christmas period, with Steve Kinser already about to arrive into the country. In rallying news, it has been announced that Richard Burns will be joining Peugeot for 2002. The rumours proved to be true, but it does seem that Burns will be taking a pay cut because Peugeot had to settle with Subaru out of court for an undisclosed sum. Burns taking a pay cut is a rumour, but it seems the new world champion is certainly hot property and one that the French manufacturer is very keen to have on board.
Oval Express magazine is on your stands right now, and great reading over this Christmas break for all the speedway and motorsport fans. John Evans, the editor-in-chief of Oval Express, joins us on the line, and we've already seen a very exciting start to a brand new speedway season, John.
It has been exciting because we're fortunate enough to have the talents of several very fast Americans out here running sprint cars at the moment on the World Series Championship.
It has already seen what we're coming into now is the money period of the season, where there's a lot of big money shows all coming up right over that Christmas New Year period.
Exactly. Last weekend, for example, there's a $10,000 to win two-night show at Avalon International Raceway in Victoria, and just after the new year is issued in, we have the $50,000 to win race at Parramatta, so lots of competition expected for those races. In fact, World of Outlaws star Donny Schatz is the one that's really the pace setter at the moment, because he took victory on Saturday night at Avalon, and that was in fact his fourth victory in six rounds on World Series. But the fact is, it's still Max Dumsey, the three-time champion, who just holds a tenuous lead ahead of Schatz at the moment in the standings.
Defending champion Brooke Tatnall's not having a stellar year after dramas in the West. He's, come back with a third position last weekend.
Yeah, poor Brooke. You feel for him because all manner of problems are afflicting the Shell Helix Avenger, because he's awaiting parts for his engines from America because of the World Trade Center problems. The freight is a lot slower, plus the fact that PRI trade show was on, so there's not many people around to send parts back. So he had to borrow a motor on the weekend, and unfortunately broke a titanium stub axle in the feature race, so that sort of curtailed his chances, unfortunately.
What we have seen this year is a whole host of young drivers making their first appearance on the World Series trail, and I know that everyone's seeing these runners who are very good at their own tracks really starting to stamp their name on Australian sprint car racing.
Yes, it's great to see people like young Stephen Bell being given the opportunity by Bill Mann to run the Performance Wholesale Eagle, and he actually set a career first fast time in World Series on Friday night. And also we had the likes of Percival, Drew Cruck, who I will put a plug in for being a columnist for Oval Express magazine, and young Darren Maggs, who was glad to get away from Western Australia and be back on a track that he has some knowledge on. So it's really good to see that these young guys, including Cameron Gessner, Andrew Shirley, etc., Darren Jensen, are definitely helping to increase the quality of the fields.
And of course, Oval Express focuses not only on the sprint car scene, which of course is dominating the landscape at the moment, but you do have plenty of time out to look at the rest of the speedway world.
Most certainly. In fact, we're very conscious of the need to have lots of technical articles and also look at all the local Australian business houses which do make up the industry of speedway. So we're always trying to profile some of the people who have a huge investment in the industry within Australia. So all of our features are really about personalities, people's places, and behind the scenes. We sort of leave all the news, the gossip and race reports to the internet and things like that.
Of course, it was interesting. Last week on Inside Motorsport, we had a chance to have a chat with Mike Raymond, who's taken over Parramatta City Raceway. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to get up to Sydney since he's taken back the reins.
Well, in fact, our I'm just looking at our contents page this month, and that's a two-page photo of the paved pitch in Parramatta. So it's just obvious that Mike's already had that influence already. And we've seen lots of improvements going into there. And obviously they've got big plans coming up with the 50,000 win race in January. And that's followed early in February by the Australian Sprint Car title.
And of course, for Sprint Car fans and motor racing fans, Steve Kinser will soon be on our shores racing over this Christmas period, and that is one driver who's certainly not to miss.
And also son Craig too, because that'll be his first appearance in a race car in Australia, and I'm sure lots of fans are well aware of the 16 World of Outlaw titles and 11 Knoxville National Championships and just a stellar career, obviously the world's greatest sprint car racer. So seeing the likes of Robbie Farr, Kerry Madsen, etc. competing against King Kinser will be certainly worth watching over the Christmas period, coming out from Boxing Night onwards.
Well, John, just to make it easy for us, Oval Express in the newsstands now. What's there on the cover?
On the cover is Cameron Gessner. He's in a brand new Viper, Australian-made chassis with sponsorship from Tristel. And also we feature our Tech Talk this time is the 12-degree stump puller engine, a big 700-plus horsepower motor, which is our technical feature.
John Evans from Oval Express Magazine, it's a pleasure to catch up with you once again. Look forward to speaking to you in the near future.
Thanks, Craig, and I'll take the opportunity to wish all your listeners a Merry Christmas and good spectating at the Speedway.
Well, Brett Peters, after a victory in the GT performance of the Procar Series this year, it's become a very interesting off-season, even more so with Channel 10 pulling your coverage on the last race right at the last minute.
Yeah, that was certainly a big surprise to us, and I'm sure all the teams. Very disappointing, I suppose. From my point of view, we're certainly our motorsport revolves around sponsors and the corporate side of the world. So I've certainly been sitting back, taking a look at what's going on and trying to ascertain what the best direction to go from here.
With GT performance this year for Subaru, a fantastic result. Yourself and Wayne Boatwright 1-2 in the championship. You were up the front right throughout the whole year, and it is a bit of a disappointment that Subaru hasn't seen fit to become more heavily involved. Or become involved, in fact.
Become involved, yeah. Look, I'm certainly not someone who likes to talk about negative things, but I must say we did contact Subaru midway through the year and simply requested, some kind of support. Maybe we were too specific. We maybe should have been a bit too more generalised as to any level of communication and start something going. But we certainly got a door pretty well slammed in our face, for want of a better word. It was obvious that there was no chance of any support whatsoever there. However, we've communicated with them by media releases throughout the year. In fact, several of the top executives have received every one of my media releases. So it was a bit disappointing to not even get with the, you know, I'd say hundreds of congratulations we've had from friends, family, companies, sponsors, things, to not have even heard from Subaru.
It's funny because Subaru is getting treated like shit in rallying, and yet they're putting all that money in there. John Bow and
Martin Waring.
Tom Waring.
Tom Waring, yeah.
Win the Sandown 500, and Maranello send him a congratulations in the Ferrari, and of course, Porsche are always too happy to congratulate Jim Richards, and Subaru just haven't seen fit to even congratulate you. That's amazing.
I think I was disappointed that they didn't want to know us midway through the season whilst leading the championship. So we've moved on, quite simply. We would do everything in our powers to run something different next year. We've actually had great response from two other manufacturers that want to, you know, talk to us, and we think we've got something to offer. And off we go. So it all rests now with Procar and the direction that will take.
Mm. It is going to be an interesting championship series that was launched by Ross Palmer a few weeks ago now, and at the time it was going to look like a fantastic series to be involved with, not only for the sake of the meetings were going to be a lot of stand alone, you weren't going to be shuffled off to one side. Perhaps the TV has just made it a little bit of a negative on that.
Yeah, I think the combination, I believe the category could stand having standalone events with good television. It could also stand being on a SBS or another network type TV telecast if it was with the V8s, at least half of the championship. As I sit here today, it looks like we haven't got either, and that is a real issue, I think, for those of us that require corporate support to go motor racing. We've been talking to manufacturers about GTP, and I'm anxiously waiting a phone call at the moment. I think the events over the last three or four days could have a great effect on those decisions, so that's disappointing as well.
Mm. The cars next year, with the Mustang being moved out, has allowed now for a very close championship to parity wise. It's parity is just another excuse for why you're not winning, if you ask me. But
yeah.
In actual fact, the Mustang's out now. It does mean that with the new Evos coming in, the new STIs, and all the cars being upgraded over the winter, we are going to see a fantastic championship.
Oh, I think so. Look, once again, I don't want to get into the Mustang issue. I'd stay right out of it throughout the year. But I think just in simple terms, all the other vehicles and the ones that will be there next year, the decisions for them to be made are on another level. They weren't made to be in this particular championship. They're real production cars, and they build them for all sorts of reasons, and they'll be out there racing hammer and tong next year, and I think you're right, it'll be very, very close.
And for yourself, a visit to the RAS, what are you hoping to be able to get out of these couple of days with the elite of Australian sporting community here?
Yeah, look, I've certainly upped my fitness a little bit this year, but being an older fella, so to speak, and I've certainly given my body a hammering through its life, lots of motocross and surfing and stuff, and this year I found the more I exercised, the more damage I did, so hopefully they can teach me how to not injure myself and actually get fit.
And all in all, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and look forward to seeing how the Brett Peters Motorsport team will be shaping up for 2002.
Yeah, thanks. It could be all sorts of surprises. We hope to be back in GTP, but I've got to say, over the last few days we've been considering other options, so we shall see.
Well, we never know. The Satrion team out there might have seen you running at Oran Park and just say they can't live without you.
That's it, exactly. That's great.
Stuart McCall, we caught up with him at the Oran Park round of the Procar Series. I started by asking him how he's found working with the Volkswagen team here late in the season.
Actually, it's been the second meeting. It all went very well this weekend. Like, the teams had, Volkswagen's had a bit of a bad year run this year with accidents and cars not finishing and And I think this is the first race meeting where both cars have actually finished a race, just about, although they haven't had many this year. So I think coming along, you know, gives me great joy in sort of joining the team and then, you know, putting it on pole position yesterday in qualifying and then, you know, following up with 2 seconds in the race and helping Tim along to claim something for the year, finishing third in the championship, which, you know, that's been really good for the team.
A big difference driving the Beetle to the Formula Ford, of course.
Oh, between the Formula Ford and Formula Holden, the Beetle is just a totally different world. Like, you know, front-wheel drive car, you know, road car brakes on them, and not a great deal of power. It's sort of, and it's got a roof on it as well, so that sort of makes it very, very different. But, you know, I think I'm adapting quite well.
Getting into a factory team begs the question, has there been talk of getting you and Tim over to run in the Volkswagen Cup meetings over in Europe?
Well, Tim and Matt Coleman went over earlier on in the year, but no, there's been no talk of it. You know, I've just joined the team for this race meeting only so far, and you know, just waiting to see. You know, I'd like to join them for next year as well. They're moving to Class A in some Volkswagen Golfs, so I'll just have to wait and see what happens in the future. You know, I'd love to join Volkswagen as a group and, you know, hopefully go places with them.
And so next season you haven't got anything committed for a racing program yet?
No, nothing's committed for next season as a racing program just yet.
Well, it's going to be a nail-biting winter, I guess, but hopefully they'll give you the call back on the performances today.
Yeah, hope so. You know, it's like, I think, just about every winter for me so far. I sort of, oh, please, I hope, but, you know, I've performed quite well here this weekend and, you know, hopefully it's enough to open some eyes within Volkswagen and get a good drive next year.
We wish you all the best for it.
Thanks very much.
On Wednesday, CAMS, the Australian Sports Commission, and Marsh completed its third Marsh Young Talented Drivers program at the Australian Institute of Sport. This program had been created to develop young drivers under the age of 25 from all disciplines of motorsport, allowing them to gain the knowledge from Australia's top coaches, psychologists, physiotherapists and dietitians on how they can improve their performance, both physically and, of course, mentally. This year's camp included one driver who had been selected by CAMS State Championship Series from each state, and for the first time included a representative from New Zealand, in fact, the Bruce McLaren Trophy winner. This year's two scholarship recipients from Marsh for 2002 is the Victorian Formula Ford driver, Glenn Hastings, a karting driver who has made his way up through the historical Formula Ford ranks to next year running in the National Championship, and Tasmanian historical sedan driver in Adam Beachy. I had a chance to catch up with both these drivers at the AIS this week.
Glenn Hastings, congratulations. A scholarship with the Marsh Insurance Company through the Talented Drivers Program is certainly going to help you for next season.
Yes, absolutely. As well as the money, I think the leverage I'll be able to use with other sponsors, being able to say, well, I've been picked by CAMS, Marsh and the Australian Institute of Sport, that they think I'm going to go on and do well. And I'll be able to tell that to sponsors, and hopefully we'll be able to get some other people on board to really back me into next year.
Well, for people who don't know your background, how did you eventually get selected to join the Marsh Talented Drivers School?
Well, basically I think they pick one person from each state who they think is going to go on and do well. And I'm from Victoria, and this year they chose me after our performance in the Victorian State Series in Formula Ford.
The Victorian State Series and the Victorian Division seem to be a very professional organisation. They have their own magazine which comes out with motorsport news, and they do seem to do a good job of promoting the state level events.
Yeah, absolutely. The Victorian Series, I would say, is about the toughest in Australia. They tend to get the biggest fields, and motorsport's really strong in Victoria, and we've shown that we've done well this year, and as I said, hopefully next year we can go on and do the full national series.
Formula Ford is a very competitive division. What steps did you take to get into Formula Ford in Victoria?
Originally I started in karting when I was 8 years old. I then moved into historic Formula Ford. I drove a 1974 Elfin. And from there, I've only recently got into the modern cars. At the moment, I drive a 1994 model Van Diemen. And So yeah, that was sort of the next logical step for us. And then next year, hopefully move into a 2001 car.
In the National Series?
In the National Series, yeah.
Driving those different types of classes of cars, how has each step taken you? Like going from a go-kart, which obviously doesn't have a gearbox, to the 1970 model Formula Ford, what was the biggest thing you had to learn there?
Probably, well, obviously you've got a gearbox now, and you've got mirrors, which you never had in a go-kart and everything. I mean, a go-kart, you make up a large sort of percentage of the size of the kart, whereas so when you first get in a big Formula Ford, it almost feels like it's driving you until you get used to it, and then obviously you sort of get a little bit more confident and move on from there.
What about career goals? Obviously, one step at a time is the national championship of the Formula Ford, but where is your eventual aim?
I'd like to become a V8 supercar driver and, sort of say that that's my job. Be a professional racing driver in Australia.
Now, you've spent 3 days here at the AIS. What has that taught you towards those goals?
It's taught us a lot about nutrition, about looking after your body, and showing us that our body as a driver is important as the car we drive. That a car isn't the be-all and end-all, that gains can be made through the foods we eat and the exercises we do away from the track.
Has it given you a new look at perhaps what you're about to put in your mouth?
Sure, absolutely. It's I think there'll be a few changes coming up at home.
Well, it's probably good to learn all this right before Christmas.
Absolutely, yeah, so we're not stuck on those kilos.
Congratulations on your success firstly this year in Victoria and now and with the scholarship for Marsh.
Thank you very much.
Adam Beattie, congratulations. You too receive a scholarship for 2002 from the Marsh organisation. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks for that. It's been a fantastic opportunity to be one of the few selected throughout Australia. So yeah, it's been great.
Tasmania has had a great history of motorsport and has had a great history of producing a lot of great drivers.
Yes, yeah, so hopefully one day I'll live on and hopefully follow that history, so it should be good.
For yourself, what discipline were you driving?
I drive a historic type car, like it's a pre-1972 XU1 Tirana, a race against the Almanaros and Mustangs in my class.
What drew you to racing in sedans?
Oh, my family have always been involved in motorsport in Tasmania and throughout, so I sort of might take up that sport. I've only been doing it for five race meetings now competitively, so I'm finding it very easy at the moment.
It's a pretty big ask, five meetings and already to be the most talented young fella in the state.
Yeah, it has been good. I have been going very well this year. There's a lot of people behind me, a very good car behind me. That's been great.
So your background was straight into the sedans, you didn't go up through the karting ranks?
No, unfortunately I'm a bit big for the go-karts, so I just went straight into the cars.
For yourself, starting off in sedans, do you have an inkling to go open-wheelers or do you want to just concentrate on the tin tops?
Yeah, well, my time for racing, I'm going to hopefully upgrade in the next few years to get well-known. I'm going to hopefully next year go to a few mainland circuits and just see what happens from there.
You'll still keep campaigning the Tirana?
Yeah, we'll be for the next few years, yeah.
Eventually, obviously, everyone wants to race at Bathurst. Can you see yourself being able to make those steps up through the ranks?
Yeah, well, hopefully if I keep my same dedication, determination behind me, I'll finally get there. It's always been a goal to race a V8 supercar, so it's like the lifestyle, and it's like an athlete for them.
Of course, coming from Tasmania, John Bowe obviously is someone that you would like to model yourself on.
Yeah, he's a fantastic driver and been going very well lately.
Out of a drive at the moment, but hopefully not too long.
No, he went off for too much longer, I'm sure.
Well, congratulations on your success this weekend and all the best for 2002.
Yeah, thanks. I'd just like to thank CAMS and the Australian Institute of Sport and Marsh once again. It's been a fantastic opportunity.
Well, Tom Hutton, enjoying the national capital here at the AIS. How have you enjoyed these few days with all the all the instructors from the Australian Institute of Sport?
Yeah, it's been good. You know, it's a bit of an eye-opener to just learn that little bit more about the diet side of things and the physical training. I think it, you know, it really helped.
When you were matching up against some of these other runners from different types and categories of motorsport, how did you feel?
Yeah, you know, not knowing anyone before I came here, you know, we're all sort of starting out on an even field, I guess, you know, and there is people that are fitter and some that aren't, you know. It was just interesting to see.
Have you appreciated from what they've been teaching you here just how important, even though you're not doing a physical activity like a cyclist or a swimmer or a runner, how important that can be towards your performance towards the end of the race?
Yeah, definitely. It's not only the physical. Well, with the physical side of it goes the mental side of it, you know. And if you can feel better at the end of the race in yourself, well, your brain is obviously working better, and you know, and you're thinking better. So,
what was your background and introduction through to the Marsh Tanner Drivers Program?
I've raced improved production. Mazda RX-3 for the last 2 years, and I won the Queensland Championship in both years.
How did you get involved firstly in improved production?
Well, my business, we run a mechanical performance type business, and the Mazda is what we base our work around. And so I was, well, first of all, my father got it. We used to race one years ago as a production car. And it was just a category that we thought would be the easiest and cheapest to get into, seeing we can do all the work on the car ourselves. So.
Have you been racing for any time now?
No, this is the second year. Just started off in the year 2000. I did a few street sprints, you know, in the street car before that, but no, actually never had a CAMS licence until then.
So what was the process to go through and eventually get your CAMS licence and then start competing on the state scene?
Just once I actually got the money together to buy the car, you know, once we had the car, it was all right, you know, got the licence and got the gear, just went from there, basically. Did a meeting, you know, nice and cheaply the first time, and just got hooked.
How do you go about getting a licence? For someone who goes, gee, I'd love to get involved in motorsport, I'd love to, you know, I've got an old RX-3 sitting in the garage there. How do you go about firstly getting the car built up and then seeing going about getting a licence?
I think the easiest way to do it is to buy a car that's already logbooked. You probably save a lot of money. You can pick a car for anywhere between $8,000 and $15,000. You can get a pretty good car. Once you've got the car, it's a matter of sitting there. This is just basically a lecture before you actually get your licence and you're in your P plates for the five meetings. And once you do that and prove that you can do it without causing any horrific problems, well, you can now you get your C4 licence, which you can do interstate. You know, you can do interstate racing, interstate levels. And
what about for yourself? What sort of goals do you have? Obviously, you started it because you're in the business. But
I mean, it does help. It's starting to help the business a lot because obviously the car and myself, we go quite well, and people take notice of that and want the same sort of thing, same results. That for one. But I mean, you know, if the opportunity comes to do anything else, you know, I would take it. But we don't have the funding to go too much further than where it is now.
Well, congratulations on your success this year
in
the car, and particularly being selected to join the Marsh training program.
Thank you very much.
Got a brand new book on the market that might make just the perfect Christmas present for that man in your life, or maybe that woman in your life that loves Formula One motor racing, and in particular Michael Schumacher. What a smile, what a driver. Best in the world, without a doubt. And this book is Michael Schumacher, A Decade of Formula One, by Adam Cooper, compiled by Peter Murray, who we have on the phone from Adelaide this morning. Peter Murray, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin.
Hey, thanks for your time here this morning. And look, this book, Michael Schumacher, A Decade of Formula One, it's got plenty of glossy colour photos and plenty of words. How did you come to be involved in the program, and compiling the book means exactly what?
Okay, Kevin, basically I've published a number of books on Formula One drivers in the past 15 years, and I have done a book on Michael Schumacher in the past, but I think he deserved another book. But not being a Formula One writer, I'm a cricket writer, I decided to get somebody who's close to the action, and that's Adam Cooper, to write the book. And compiling means simply, as a fan of Schumacher's, I was able to put the whole thing together, I guess. I'm a designer as well, and it was just a joy to see Schumacher, you know, do so well, I guess, in the last 2 years, in particular with Ferrari.
So you more or less edited it and decided that these photos will go here and these words will go here and put it all together?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Cricket fan, hey?
Yeah.
We'll talk about cricket a bit later on, but Adam Cooper, the author, where does he hail from?
Oh, Adam is actually an English chap. He now lives in Belgium. He's been riding Formula One for the last 10 years, and in fact started at the same time as Schumacher started in Formula One. Adam Cooper used to be a F3 journalist, which is where Schumacher started in 89, Formula 3 in England. And he's one of those characters that doesn't like interviews, doesn't like you know, taking the spotlight, very quiet person. You wouldn't even know he was there if he was in a room.
What's the big attraction of Formula One racing for you?
For me, I think it's for a lot of people. When Formula One came to Australia in 85 to Adelaide, and now, of course, it's in Melbourne, but when Formula One racing came to Australia, it wasn't until people actually went to see the action that they became hooked.
Mm.
It's just something that's very different, very unusual, and it's all the social atmosphere, it's the whole environment, you know, the superstars of racing, I guess. Since IndyCar racing has been introduced to Australia and Queensland, we've seen another dimension of it where the drivers are more approachable. You know, you can talk to the drivers and you can see interviews, and it's very different to Formula One. These chaps are superstars. You know, Schumacher himself earns nearly $50 million Australian dollars a year at Ferrari, and then there's the endorsements on top.
It just amazes me that I know that every time they get in the car, they have their life at risk. But that's the same for any of us when we get in the car and drive around the block. But $50 million Australian a year after you bought your 10 houses around the world and all your luxury cars, what do you do with it?
I think in Schumacher's case, he and his family have decided to put their money together, because he has a brother driving, Ralph, of course, in Formula One. They put their money together because their family aren't wealthy. He didn't come from a wealthy family. And
he does now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, their father's a very nice person, and he's been their supporter all the way through, but now they've got to the point of, let's put our money together, and you know, they live in Monaco, and you know, to hide the tax dollars and so on. So they've decided to go into business together, and I have no idea what sort of business at this point. Neither do they, I don't think. But
well, they could always start up a motor racing team, and Alain Prost is proof that that doesn't always work.
Well, it doesn't always work, but Prost wasn't reliant on... Came up, of course, in the days when there wasn't $50 million around, you know.
Yeah.
He wasn't reliant on money to start a business, I guess. He's now reliant on sponsors. And what's happened with Prost, of course, is the French sponsors who have been sponsoring his team have all sort of said, well, you're not doing too well, we're going, see it.
Mm. Well, mentioning Alain Prost is a good way to get into some stats about Michael Schumacher. He's been around on the Formula One scene since, what, about 91 with Benetton, and then over to Ferrari in 96. Four world championships.
Correct.
Equaling Alain Prost. Fangio has five, but he's eclipsed Alain Prost in three areas. 44 career fastest laps, Alain Prost 41. 53 career wins, 51 for Prost. 801 career points, 798.5 for Prost. One that eludes him, though, is pole positions. Antonin Senna, 65. Michael Schumacher, 43. He's only 32, Michael Schumacher.
Correct.
Won his first Grand Prix in just his 18th race. Forgetting those stats, how do we remember, or how will we remember him, Michael Schumacher?
I think we'll remember him as somebody who had to win the fans. You know, he's not somebody who's liked very much around the world because of his attitude. He's a very arrogant person, comes across on TV in his interviews and so on. But, you know, in recent years he's had two children, he's mellowed, and he's a different person, and that's starting to show as well. I think we'll remember Schumacher as, because give him another 5 years, I'd say, racing, we'll remember him as the best ever. I mean, Senna has that at the moment in recent times. But we'll remember Schumacher as the best ever, and we'll be grateful that the man was actually in Australia racing and that we actually got a chance to see him and so on, you know. But he's one of those characters. I think Senna was the same. Senna was the bad boy of Formula One. And it wasn't until the end of his career that he started winning real fans.
Mm.
You know, he was a real fighter in the car. And Schumacher's showing that now. He's actually starting to really fight to get his wins.
What a shame that Senna and Schumacher didn't well, circumstances prevented them from going head-to-head over the past few years, because he was... Schumacher is head and shoulders above everybody else, isn't he, in terms of being the best?
He is, but there are other drivers out there, given the opportunity, who will equal him, and they are coming up now. You know, Senna and Schumacher would never have, after Senna died in 94, Senna and Schumacher would never have come across each other in 95, because Senna had already agreed to join IndyCar in the States.
Is that right? He was giving it away?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, he already had done that, and Nelson Piquet had convinced him to go across, and so had Fittipaldi to go across to IndyCar. So we wouldn't have seen this actual fight between Senna and Schumacher. Senna had had enough of Formula One. He didn't like all the, you know, the nonsense that went on with Formula One. He wanted to be more free as a driver. But Michael Schumacher, well, you know, he's going to have a lot of contemporaries. He's going to have a lot of people now coming up with him and against him. And when we see retirements of people like Häkkinen, you know, he's not going to be driving this year, in 2002, there'll be somebody else in a good car who'll be able to equal Schumacher.
Mm.
Now it's going to get interesting.
I didn't realise, or I didn't... 7 years since Ayrton Senna died. I didn't remember really until having a look through the book and thinking Ayrton Senna, 94... Doesn't it? 7 years, just an extraordinary. But look, in that time, 53 victories for Michael Schumacher, 24 second places, 15 third places.
Yep.
But I'll tell you one incident that I'm going to remember him for, and it's not a terribly good one, and you might know which one I'm talking about. It had to do with Damon Hill. That looked like that he cut him off, preventing them both from... Michael Schumacher couldn't win it. So it looked like he was going to say, well, Damon Hill, you're not going to win it either. Can you refresh my memory what race that was?
Well, I can actually tell you, I was sitting right there when it happened. In fact, it happened in Adelaide. It was a case of they were getting very close to the end of the race. Now, this is 1994, I think, 95. The last race of Adelaide. They were getting very close to the end of the race. And... Schumacher just decided, well, my car's not going too well. I might do some damage.
Yeah.
And he just literally did what Senna had done with Alain Prost earlier. He ran into the car. And, of course, now with onboard cameras and all sorts of things, you can see physical evidence of it, you know. So this is something the book has done. We've actually got some images showing not so much that particular incident, but incidents from the cockpit.
Yeah.
You know, where Schumacher has, I supposedly, done the wrong thing.
That's interesting. You were sitting there watching it, and that's the perception you come up with as well. It just... That, to me, was pretty rank, and that's what, as I say, that's what, 6 years ago, and I still remember that, and I thought to myself, you beat, you know, like, I didn't think it was terribly nice, and here he is, 5 or 6 years on, and I don't know, do other people still talk about that?
They do, you know, like, it really is a case of Schumacher is a very hated person on the circuit, and everyone's learned to love him. I don't know why, but it's happened because he's winning races. He's a champion, you know. And as I say, the last couple of years with Ferrari in particular, he's mellowed out. He's a different personality now. And I don't think he'd take the chances or risks that he used to take when he was trying to get to that stage of earning $50 million a year. There's a photo in the book of Schumacher actually crying at a press conference in Monza after winning in 2000, September 2000. Schumacher's known for not really having those kind of feelings, you know. So he has changed.
This book, you've mentioned a couple of the photos, the photography is just, well, it's brilliant. You know, it's such great, big, glossy photos, but it's interspersed with words, but not too many words to get you bogged down. Was that the idea, putting it together, that it's a nice flick through as well as a good read?
I think what's happened, look, going back many years ago, 20 years ago, I used to read Formula One magazines, and there was a magazine called Formula One that came out of England, and I noticed there were only ever one or two cut pictures in it. I brought out a magazine in the mid-80s when we had our Grand Prix in Australia, our first Grand Prix. I brought out a magazine that became a world magazine called Pre-Editions. And that magazine I based on colour. It was all colour all the way through. And I discovered at that point that people want to see this. You know, yes, they do want to know the information. But most people nowadays don't want to get bogged down reading. They'd rather look at some pictures that they haven't seen before and know what the picture is, you know. The book itself also has detailed illustrations of the cars that Schumacher has driven in the last couple of years, all his winning cars. And people want to see that sort of thing. What does the car look like inside?
So,
I think I pride myself in showing sportsmen and women in this way, rather than bogging people down with a lot of statistics and a lot of information which they already know.
Yeah. So who do you think this book will appeal to the most? The hardcore motor racing fan would buy it regardless, but it perhaps opens up a wider market?
It does, actually. We already know that the sort of people who are buying the book are mums. A lot of mums are buying the book for children and for dad, of course, you know. Mm. And, you know, there's so many female Formula One fans, I'm quite surprised. I didn't realise.
Is that right? All that, what, they like the good-looking men, do they?
Oh, no, I think it's just the interesting part of Formula One. You know, this guy earns $50 million. My God, look at him, you know.
Yeah.
And all he does is drive around a circuit for 16 times a year or whatever, you know.
What's one of the more astounding things, Peter, that you've learned about Michael Schumacher, not necessarily in terms of the books you've done previously, but in putting this book together, is there something that you've learned that you thought, gee, well, that I didn't know that about him before, that's blown you away a little?
Yes, certainly. There's always things that you learn about people, and there's things that happen as the year goes on, or the years go on. Schumacher's become a very superstitious person, and, like Steve Waugh and our cricket team, who has his little red hanky, Schumacher has little tokens and little things that he does. The underwear he wears, the socks he wears, he's become superstitious. And in fact, when he had the massive crash in Melbourne earlier this year at our first Grand Prix, he wasn't wearing some of the things that he should or normally does wear. And he blames that crash entirely on the fact that he didn't have the right socks on, you know.
The right socks. That would have made all the difference.
Well, you know, so I've discovered that he's actually a very superstitious person recently. And this wasn't the Michael Schumacher who was the hard, cold German Formula One driver that everyone got to know. He has mellowed.
Is he eccentric?
I don't think he is, no. Neither is his brother, actually. They're both very down-to-earth people. Eccentric in terms of, he doesn't spend his money the way that most people do and so on, you know. He does do all the right things, as a German person does, you know.
He's just a normal guy that's very good at driving a car that has a slight attitude problem that is a bit superstitious.
Well, yeah. Very.
In a nutshell.
Yeah.
In a nutshell. Is his, put him in any car that's half decent and he's got more chance of winning than anybody else, fair call?
Definitely. I mean, we saw that in his very first race when he rode for Eddie Jordan in the Jordan back in 91. He took a car that had just started for Formula One. That was their first year of Formula One. And he took that car and basically ripped it right through the race. He was right on the front runners, but of course the car blew up. It couldn't cope with it. So.
Yeah.
he's very capable.
In the book, Peter, what is your favourite part of it? A favourite photo, favourite chapter? Is something that you really remember fondly about it?
I think really what I've done in the book is I've put a portfolio of photographs towards the back of the book, of recent times. But I've also included in the book a lot of photographs of he and his wife. He's become very close to his wife, and she actually travels to every Grand Prix, and they don't take the children with them, but she's become part of the team. And nearly every photograph of Michael Schumacher in the pits or near his car, you will see his wife, Corinna, with him. And I think that's the part of the book I like. It's added the human element to Michael Schumacher. You know, like, he does take holidays and he does relax.
Mm, he is real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the part of the book I like, apart from all the usual photographs one sees of a Formula One driver with a helmet on.
Yeah. And it's red, isn't it? Everything, every photo has red because of the colour of the Ferrari. It's just a red theme.
You should see the Italian version of the book, Kevin.
Oh, really? What, is it on red paper?
Well, actually, no. No, but the photos are more red. We've actually got a different cover for the Italian book because, of course, they're not really Schumacher fans. They're Ferrari fans.
Oh, okay.
That's
yeah, this would be a huge book in Italy.
Yes, it is. We actually have an agent in Italy who's out there at this very moment taking orders.
You could wrap up one of Michael Schumacher's socks and sell it in Italy, I'd reckon. Really?
It would be a bestseller if we did that.
Well, look, they're a good-looking couple, aren't they, Michael Schumacher and his wife? And and there's a lot of photos of him smiling through the book. He's got a... He's a photogenic guy, isn't he, when he wants to be?
When he wants to be, yes. He's got that German protruding chin, as his brother does.
Yeah.
But it's a cheeky smile nowadays, you know, which is great, because, you know, the guy never used to smile. He was a very serious person when he first started in Formula One.
Mm. How does he get on with the other drivers? Him and his brother obviously are close if they're going into business, but do the other drivers regard him as this arrogant so-and-so?
Not anymore. You
no?
know, like, there's a new breed now. If you look at the list of Formula One drivers in the 2002 start, you'll see that there's very few drivers that we all recognise names of. And these guys hold Michael Schumacher in awe, you know, like they've started in Formula One after years of watching their hero driving.
So. Yeah.
There's no longer this attitude problem where if Schumacher was around in the days of, you know, the Piquets and the Mansells and Prosts and all these guys who had massive egos, he would have suffered, actually, because he would have been one of maybe 10. Nowadays, you know, the Formula One drivers are very, very calm. They're all very calm people, and they're not outspoken as they used to be. Even people like, Eddie Chappie, they just don't say anything anymore. You know, Johnny Herbert, can't say anything anymore. But they used to be very, very outspoken in their early days.
Mm. Best of luck with Michael Schumacher, A Decade of Formula One. It's a great book. It's going to sit quite nicely on my coffee table at home. And I thank you for your time this morning, Peter Murray.
Thank you for your time, Kevin.
One man who's been enjoying his season so far in the World Series is Drew Kruk. He joins us on the line now. And Drew, what actually got you out of playing music into motor racing?
Oh, probably lack of fame. Yeah, no, I did it for a few years, like 4 or 5 years, and we did pretty well. The band I was in, a band called Bull Rush, won the Queensland Rock Awards, and, you know, we were doing some good stuff, but some of my mates in the band were getting into some pretty heavy things, and I thought, oh, this isn't really for me. And the opportunity came up with the team because I'd started to crew with them, so, I didn't hard and fast say this is what I was going to do, but that's kind of the way it ended up. And, you know, I still play music. I'm still in a band on the Gold Coast, but, you know, I sort of grew up a little from the idea of I'm going to be a rock star and went other ways, and now I don't know whether I'm thinking now I'm going to be a race car driver, but it's kind of turning out that way.
You have done a bit of acting, you've worked at SeaWorld. It's certainly not the traditional background that you might hear from a Michael Schumacher or the like.
Yeah, I know. I wish it was, but, you know, I don't know what to do. I just sort of head to the good things in life, I think. You know, I did work for Titan for a while, and I did sell concrete for 3 years and that sort of stuff, but I pretty much just like to head to where the girls are.
You don't mind mixing things up a bit. I believe you're doing all the merchandise for the World Series this year.
Yeah, that actually came up at lunchtime at SeaWorld one day. I sort of got talking to the guys from World Series and you know, I had some ideas. I always kind of had the idea for a T-shirt label, things like that. And when I found out that no one had the merchandise deal, I dived at it. And with a mate from SeaWorld, we spent the next 6 months from that lunchtime over the phone to David Lander preparing and making stuff, so it's all falling in pretty well. We're learning pretty fast, though, how to do it, but yeah, it's something I've always kind of wanted to do. It's just funny how I'm doing it now, because 6 months ago I scratched my backside at SeaWorld.
What were you doing at SeaWorld?
Oh, it's a groovy little place. They call it operations.
Uh-huh.
Well, there's all the departments. There's, you know, the mammal trainers, and I was in operations, which really means sitting there on the rides. But, you know, there was a good pass to it where, you know, present little shows and do like the crowd tours for the back of the dolphin shows and stuff, you know. But you rotate every day, see, and you're working with 50 other people in operations, and half of them are girls, and it's so much fun. crazy fun.
Now, you might be racing sprint cars now, but you started off in the V8 stock cars, which, of course, were formerly NASCAR here.
Yeah. Well, actually, Craig, I started in Formula Ford. That was the first thing we did. And then in the same year, I had to go at sprint cars, and then a bit later on, we got a saloon car, a little Commodore saloon car that we did pretty well in, but yeah, we got this stock car last year. Actually, no, early this year, so... Yeah, but Formula Ford was where I really pretty much started, and that taught me a lot of stuff about, you know, keeping smooth.
Does racing on all the different surfaces that you've done now with the road courses in an open-wheel car and, of course, in a sprint car, has they each taught you different things about driving?
Yeah, it's basically boils down to just being competitive, I think. You know, it teaches you a lot about driving and staying cool. Like, and a lot of times it can be frustrating because I can be in the sprint car and hit big holes and think, you know, if only I was in bitumen, this would never happen. You know, the track always stays the same. You know exactly what you're coming into the corner and all that sort of stuff. So sometimes I'm in the sprint car going, oh, you know, road racing. But then you just shake it off and think sprint cars are just too insane. You know, they're the biggest fun you'll ever have, the most thrilling thing ever. So you just bite the bullet, and next time you come into that hole, you just blast through it, see whatever happens. But yeah, it teaches you a lot about racing in general. But you know, racing sprint cars, you have to be the sharpest. I don't care what you're going to race. To race a sprint car, you have to be so sharp, if anything happens.
Racing a sprint car, of course, is quite a challenge because big tyres, big horsepower. And as you said, the surface is always changing. How do you adapt with the experience you have now, 3 years in the World Series, last year a year off, how do you adapt to being able to get to a racetrack and, unlike Oran Park that hasn't really changed in the last 30 years, each time you go to Avalon, it's a different track. It's the same layout, but the surface is always changing.
That's the biggest thing. I'm not so sure if many people realise that the track changes within 20 minutes. You know, something we found at Avalon on the first night is that and all the shows before then at World Series, the track was going what we call slick, which is like glass. When you're in the race car, it feels like you're just skating along on ice or glass, and to get your setup right, you have to make the car stick to that sort of stuff. So the whole night we're all setting up, you know, making the cars such a way that it'll stick to this really slippery surface, and then within half an hour, the weather sort of changed and brought out a lot of moisture in the track, which makes the track get all tacky with clay again. And all of a sudden, it went from glass to one of the fastest Avalons I've ever seen. And yeah, that's why guys like Donnie Schott, Danny Smith, myself, and a whole bunch of guys were just rolling over, not from any real holes, just from, you know, the track changes.
Just biting in on the right rear,
yeah,
so hard.
And you're for endlessly looking at the track, especially when you're in the car racing. The whole time you're looking through all these tear-offs and visors and mud and stuff, and just looking for the track. Like, where is it? Not so much where is it, where's the fast part? You know, that's what I'm saying. It keeps you so sharp. And at the same time, you're still turning, pointing, turning, steering, but looking all the time. Like when we're in stock cars or anything, fair enough, you're doing 200 and what Ks, but you can just do it like the last lap. You know, you get into a real pattern and just do it like the last lap and sit on in the same tenth of a second for every lap, but that's the way it is.
I guess also with the stock cars, you've got a radio communication back to the pit, and someone can say, Majiki's running this way through the corner, and you can try that change. Unless you can see the driver in a sprint car, you don't know what the heck he's doing.
Yeah, I know. That's another little frustrating thing. I found myself in the lead at Avalon on the weekend, well, half a lap, and I only know that because I spun out with one lap to go. I was leading it I was racing it so hard, thinking, oh, you know, I had some good Americans in my race, and I was going as hard as I possibly could. I thought I might go up track a bit to see if there's any grip up here, because there wasn't a lot of grip on the track, and when I got higher, I got into some loose stuff, and it turned my car around. When I spun out, I didn't spin straight away. I did a bit of a donut. I looked back, and the guys were miles away. So I did a little donut. Thought if I get back on track, I can get back in front, but ended up stalling it. But yeah, that's the thing. You don't know where you are. The whole time you're thinking, they're on my tail. That's all you do. Go flat stick all the time, which is good. But geez, it exhausts you sometimes, especially when you're in front.
Now, with this experience that you have gained this year and being so competitive against the Americans, has it made you think perhaps you would like to try your hand over in the States?
I've travelled to the States a couple of times, but to be honest, Craig, I just love Australia too much. You know, I really don't know how the guys just adapt to the food and the weather and the lifestyle too much. Like, I live on the Gold Coast, and I enjoy that too much, you know. We're trying to run some deals for Konica Lights next year. You know, a lot of small offers have come up for the States, but I don't know about you. I don't know whether you could just pack up and move there for 6 months and do that kind of thing. I'd get far too homesick. I'd rather just see something out in Australia because I love it too much, you know. Mm. But we got something good on Thursday. We're actually doing a test in Mark Larkham's car. It's a supercar, so, you know, I'm looking forward to that. I haven't driven one of those before, and that's what we're keen to do. And it's good exposure for my sponsor, Titan, you know. So they're based out of New South Wales and Queensland, and that's really where the team heads when we want to sell some sheds. So, yeah, that rhymed. Whew.
And, of course, Mark Larkham having, a bit of speedway in his team with Jeff Jackson, Skip Jackson's brother, and, of course, a well-known car builder, working on his team for the last year.
Yeah, Jeff worked with us at the end of last year as well when he did a bit for us when we were racing in Queensland just for fun, and he's a really, really good guy and really knowledgeable too. But there's another guy in the team that a lot of people don't know, a guy called Kenny McNamara, who's been our engine builder since day one, and he actually went from us to Stone Brothers to Mark's team, and he's still building our motors now and making Larkham's go so fast. And he worked beside Campbell Little when they won Bathurst and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, we've got a lot of friends within that team, and you know, I can't wait for Thursday. Jeez, I can't wait.
Well, Drew, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you. Of course, you are on a little bit of a break now. They gave away $10,000, so Dave Lander and Wade have had to duck back up to Newcastle to make it back at a few local shows over the Christmas break before the World Series really kicks off again.
Can I tell you a little secret on where they spent the $10,000, where Donnie spent it?
Yeah.
No one's allowed to know this, but I'm going to tell you. Donnie's gone back to the States today, so it's okay. We were staying in the hotel room two doors down.
Mm-hmm.
And all the guys got back from the track at around 4 a.m. and they didn't give them the spare set of keys. So Donnie ran straight from the reception all the way through the car park at full noise, then banged straight through the door of the hotel with his shoulder, just went straight in and knocked the whole door down. Because he had $10,000 in his pocket. What does he care?
Yeah, but if he has just gone home for Christmas, he's going to find out that that's not going to go too far.
Oh, no.
He's now got about 4.5.
No, the guy's loaded anyway. He's a good guy to hang out with. He's just so loaded. I don't know what the family or the team do back there, but there's money spilling out of his pockets. It's great.
Well, Drew, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you and look forward to seeing how you fare in the second half of the World Series Sprint Cars. Of course, coming to tracks which I think you'd be a lot more familiar than getting over there to Kewanee and Bunbury.
Yeah, a little. You know, I always liked those places, but maybe that's true. Like a couple of places here are a little more familiar, but you know, yeah, I think it'll all go pretty well from here. We had a little rollover, but we finished every single feature from here on in. We're only 10th in the points, which is a little sort of small, but I still think we got the pace, and it's a matter of just pulling my finger out, basically. So I think it'll be good.
Well, have a good Christmas, and we appreciate you spending the time with us here today.
No problems. Have a good time. See you later.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of SSFM Canberra via Comradesat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.